Session 9. Throughout the 19th and 20th centuries, psychiatric hospitals were an increasingly common sight, with some of them being massive facilities designed to house thousands of those deemed mentally ill. Problems abounded at these facilities, and between ethical concerns, effectiveness, and budget cuts, many of the older asylums began to be closed down in the 1950s and 60s, in favor of smaller clinics or other facilities. One of the most well-known psychiatric facilities in the U.S. was the Danvers State Hospital in Massachusetts, built in 1874, which operated for over 100 years. Before its demolition, it was undeniably an extremely creepy place, and Session 9, a 2001 horror film, decided to use it as a setting and as part of the plot, making for an unnerving experience filled with paranoia and uncertainty. Let's take a look. The film opens with Gordon, the owner of an asbestos abatement company, sitting in a van outside of Danvers State Hospital with his friend and co-worker, Phil. Gordon is clearly exhausted and distracted, as his infant daughter has had an ear infection for some time, constantly keeping him and his wife awake. He's desperate for some money and hoping to land the contract for the hospital, a massive psychiatric facility that operated from 1878 to 1992. Gordon knows that other companies have already put in bids, with them being fast-paced and low-priced, but while he urges safety, Phil tells him that if they want this job, they're going to have to promise expediency. They meet with the man in charge of hiring the contractors, Bill, who gives them a tour of the facility and comments that while he'd love to tear the whole place down, since the land is valuable, the hospital is in the National Historic Registers, so it's going to be converted to a town hall. I'll note that in reality, most of the facility was torn down in 2006 and 2007, aside from the central building, which was renovated and converted to apartments. Bill is clearly quite knowledgeable about the building and what went on here, mentioning that the prefrontal lobotomy was perfected here, and offers to show them the morgue in the basement, but Gordon just asks to be shown the problem areas. While continuing the tour, they're shown one of the wards for the more extreme patients, and Gordon stops and stares at a wheelchair sitting in a darkened hallway. As he does so, he hears an ominous voice greet him by name, before being called back by the others. Gordon notices a number of issues with the building's asbestos that the other companies didn't seem to point out, but Bill says that he's on a deadline for the construction crews, so he asks for an estimate on how long this will take them. Phil initially says it will take 3 weeks minimum, but Gordon instead says 2, to Phil's surprise. Phil hesitantly agrees, and the group continues on, checking out one of the patients' rooms, with a large number of faded photographs and cutouts on the wall, which Bill explains was some sort of therapy that was big in the 70s. As the three step back outside, Phil heads back in to grab a bag he forgot, and Bill congratulates Gordon on his baby. Gordon then tells Bill that he'll do the job in 1 week, telling him how much he needs this job, which sways Bill enough to give them the contract. Gordon drives back home, sitting outside in his truck as he watches his wife handle the fussing baby before wearily heading in. On Monday, the crew begins working, with Gordon and Phil joined by their regular employees, Hank, who doesn't get along well with Phil in part due to Hank being with Phil's ex-girlfriend, and Mike, a law school dropout. They're also joined by Jeff, Gordon's nephew, who doesn't take things especially seriously and is only being brought on temporarily to help finish the job. Over lunch, the group is told that Gordon arranged for a $10,000 bonus with the town, provided they're done in a week. Hank especially isn't pleased, knowing that this is at least a 2-week job, but they're all willing to stay on. They're met by the front gate guard, who begins talking about why the place was shut down, mentioning budget cuts. Mike casually remarks that it wasn't just the budget cuts, mentioning the Patricia Willard scandal in 1984. He says that Patricia was committed here in the 1970s by her parents for manic depression, but in the 80s, a new type of therapy took off, repressed memory therapy. Through this, they believed that they could unlock hidden memories of traumatic events, and Patricia recalled that when she was a child, she was frequently abused by her family in satanic rituals that also involved human sacrifice. He states that satanic ritual abuse syndrome was big in the 80s, and Patricia's case was all set to go to trial, but she dropped the suit, as a physical examination she had undergone a year prior showed her to be a virgin. Her family countersued and won, leading to the closure of Danvers, along with the budget cuts. In reality, while the satanic panic was a real thing throughout the 1980s, there was no Patricia Willard scandal, and Danvers was closed down mostly due to the massive budget cuts, which started in the 60s. While walking back in, Jeff asks Mike how he knows so much about it, to which he says that his dad worked on the case, but Hank elaborates to say that his dad is actually the state attorney general. Hank then proceeds to make fun of Mike dropping out of law school after a year. Gordon complains about a pulled muscle in his back, and apologizes for not going out for a beer with Phil and Mike, saying that he was trying to catch up on some sleep. Phil expresses some concern about them missing the bonus, and tells Gordon that he ran into an employee for one of the other asbestos companies, who is willing to come work for them. Phil wants to ditch Hank and hire him, but Gordon won't hear it, believing Hank to be a fine employee. While working, Mike and Jeff blow a fuse, and Mike tells him to go down and check the breaker box, but Jeff refuses, citing his intense fear of the dark. Mike instead heads down, fixing the issue, but then notices a collection of hospital records. Curious, he begins digging through them, finding a series of interviews recorded on tape with a patient, Mary Hobbs. He makes up an excuse and stays after the others leave for the day to listen to them, learning that Mary suffered from dissociative identity disorder and had a very traumatic event in her childhood which she repressed. One of her other identities, the princess, says that on Christmas, Mary got a pretty china doll, and her brother Peter got a big knife. After their parents went to bed, they played upstairs, but when the doctor asks what happened next, Princess says that another of the identities, Billy, only tells her nice things. The doctor asks about a third identity, Simon, but Princess says that she doesn't know any Simon. Gordon is seen sitting in his van outside of his house again, this time with a painful wound on his leg. The crew continues work the following day, and Gordon again hears the ominous voice, but ignores it. Down in the tunnels underneath the facility, Hank finds a large collection of antique silver dollars hidden behind a brick in a wall, deciding to come back at night to retrieve them. Mike continues to listen to Mary's tapes, hearing Billy emerge and tell the doctor that Princess lives in Mary's tongue because she's always talking, while he lives in her eyes because he sees everything. The doctor asks where Simon lives, but doesn't get an answer. Over lunch, the group discusses getting committed to an insane asylum, and Jeff makes a joke about lobotomies to Mike. Mike proceeds to playfully grab Jeff and put a chopstick to his eye, detailing the lobotomy procedure, which unnerves everyone but Hank. After lunch, Hank is clearly in a good mood about finding those coins, and tells Jeff to make sure he has an exit plan for this job will eventually mess him up. He lectures him about having ways to deal with stress, and how each member of the team has their own ways, but then says that Gordon is the master of remaining calm, with him never seeing Gordon lose it, although he has seen some cracks recently. Gordon, meanwhile, makes a phone call to his wife, telling her that they have to talk, but she hangs up on him. While looking out a window, he notices Phil talking to a couple of men outside, clearly making some kind of deal. Later that night, Hank sneaks back into the hospital, heading down into the tunnels to collect the coins and other trinkets found in the cache, which includes an antique lobotomy pick. While walking back out, he notices an empty jar of peanut butter on the floor and hears a number of noises before seeing a figure in the shadows. He begins moving quickly through the dark facility, nearly making it to the exit before turning a corner and shouting. The next day, the team tries to get a hold of Hank, with Phil resorting to calling his girlfriend, who tells him that Hank told her that he was heading off to casino school in Miami and left. Phil feels vindicated that he was right all along about Hank, saying that they can now replace him, but Gordon feels that something is off. He asks Phil who the two men he was talking to were, but when Phil tries to just brush it off and walk away, Gordon grabs him and angrily yells at him, surprising the group. Phil asks if he's going to hit him, causing Gordon to release him and quickly walk away. As he's sitting down, he looks down at his hands and seems to notice blood on his fingernails for the first time. Over lunch, without Gordon present, Phil laments how good this job used to be before Gordon's daughter was born, with Phil blaming Gordon's tiredness on why they lost the last two bids. Mike counters that Gordon likes being a father, despite not really wanting a child, and before, he didn't want to be a lawyer, but now he's thinking otherwise. Phil insults him by implying that he'll never be a lawyer, causing Mike to wander off, as Gordon walks dazed throughout the grounds, ending up near the cemetery. He calls his wife again, asking if they can talk, and if she'll forgive him, but she seems to hang up on him again. He's approached by Jeff, who thanks him for giving him this job, and assures him that things are going to work out. He asks about his wife, and Gordon says that she's doing well, but she's tired, and Gordon looks to be on the verge of tears. Mike, meanwhile, continues to listen to Mary's tapes, with Mary claiming that she doesn't know anyone named the Princess, Billy, or Simon. The doctor asks her about the scars on her chest, but she just claims that she fell off her bike when she was young. Billy then emerges, as the doctor tells him that Mary needs to remember what happened to her on that traumatic Christmas night. Billy refuses to do so, so the doctor states that they have to wake up Simon then to tell her, but Billy is too scared to do so. At the end of the day, while cleaning up, Gordon asks Phil what the stupidest thing he's ever done is. Phil replies that, besides coming to work here, introducing Hank to his girlfriend was pretty stupid, and Gordon abruptly admits that he hit his wife. It was on Friday, and he wanted to celebrate getting this job, so he brought home flowers and champagne. When he went to kiss her while she was cooking pasta, she accidentally spilled boiling water on his leg. And between that, the dog barking, and his daughter crying, he lost it and slapped her. He's tried to talk to her on the phone, but she won't listen, and he's staying at a motel right now. Phil then claims that the guys he was talking to were graffiti artists, who he warned off from coming back here, but it doesn't seem that Gordon really believes him. Gordon is later shown sleeping in his van outside of the hospital, having a nightmare of the incident when he slapped his wife, and the ominous voice is heard encouraging him to do it. Gordon is still nursing the burn wound on his leg, clearly having not sought out proper medical treatment. At the start of the crew's fourth workday, Phil is smoking a joint in the parking lot of the hospital as Gordon pulls up, who expresses forlornly that he just wants to go home. During the day, Phil pulls Mike aside and tells him that Gordon needs to take some time off because he's becoming a liability. Mike initially scoffs at this, but Phil tells him that Gordon hit his wife, so Mike agrees to follow his lead. Meanwhile, Jeff is forced to go check the breaker box despite his fear of the dark, and while doing so, finds Hank standing in a stairwell, looking out a window. In a monotone voice, Hank simply repeats the question of, "What are you doing here?" before wiping a bloody finger on the window. Jeff, confused, heads to go get the others, who are caught in an awkward conversation with Gordon, neither of them willing to bring up what they were talking about. They move on to discussing lunch, with Phil flipping a coin to see who's buying, using one of the antique silver coins that he says he found. Gordon suddenly turns and takes the coin, staring Phil down, but before he says anything, Jeff rushes in and announces that he found Hank. Phil doesn't believe him, calling him an idiot and telling him to go back to work, but Gordon believes him and starts following Jeff, while Phil continues to state how ridiculous this is. When they return to the stairwell, Hank is nowhere to be seen, but Gordon does notice a silver dollar on the floor. Phil says that they all heard Hank's girlfriend say that he went to Miami, but Gordon replies that they didn't. They just heard Phil tell them that. Gordon wants to call his girlfriend and find out, but Phil refuses to allow it, leading to Gordon shouting and swearing for the phone. They're interrupted, however, by hearing footsteps above them, so Gordon tells Phil to come with him to investigate, while Mike and Jeff should go downstairs to make sure he doesn't escape. Phil, however, swears at him and goes with Jeff, leading him down to the tunnels in a hurry, but soon leaves him behind to go deeper underground. Mike soon separates from Gordon, going back to the records room to listen to the final interview tape with Mary, labeled Session 9. The doctor is working on getting the Billy identity to reveal what happened that Christmas night, with him revealing that they were playing hide-and-seek, but then he refuses to elaborate on what exactly Simon did to Mary's brother Peter. In the tunnels, Phil finds Hank's CD player and some discarded clothes as the generator outside runs out of gasoline, forcing Jeff to run screaming through a darkening hallway and Mike's tape player to turn off. Phil finally finds a half-naked Hank in the tunnels, rocking back and forth and repeating the words, "What are you doing here?" Mike refuels the generator, and the tape player resumes as the Simon identity finally emerges, revealing his voice to be the same as the one that Gordon has been hearing. Simon says that Mary's brother shouldn't have scared Mary, causing her to fall down on her new doll, cutting her up. She needed someone to help her, so he introduced himself and told her to cut up her brother with his brand new knife. Afterwards, so her parents wouldn't get mad, he told her to cut them up as well. Gordon, meanwhile, makes his way back to the ward for extreme patients, wandering into Mary's old room, where he finds various pictures of his infant daughter on the wall, covered in blood. He remembers that Phil had access to his wallet at some point, just as Phil walks into the room behind him, holding a knife. Jeff runs screaming out of the hospital, making it to Gordon's van, and telling him over the walkie-talkie where he is. Shortly after, he's approached by a figure, and as Jeff is apologizing for getting freaked out, the figure rapidly approaches him. Friday finally comes, with all quiet around the facility, and the tape player is still running endlessly. Gordon, sitting in his van, hears Phil over the walkie-talkie, who tells him that they found the one responsible. Gordon walks into the hospital as Hank's replacement shows up for work, calling out as he walks through the building. Gordon finds Hank's body, and Phil, standing nearby, just shrugs and says that he was a liability. Gordon, incredulous, asks who did this, and Phil just sighs and says that he brought this on himself, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Gordon says that Phil did this, but Phil tells him to wake up and take a really good look at Hank. Gordon kneels down and removes Hank's sunglasses, finding a lobotomy pick wedged into his eye socket. Hank, still alive, just asks, What are you doing here? And Phil suggests that he doesn't tell anyone about this, because if they find out about Hank, they'll find out about the others. Gordon angrily says that Phil did this, hiring those guys he was talking to kill him. But Phil insists that Gordon is asleep and needs to wake up. Eventually, Gordon yells that he is awake, before realizing that Phil isn't there. He's approached by the other worker, who's a bit confused, and Gordon calmly grabs him, pulls out the lobotomy pick from Hank's eye, and shoves it into his. In the recording, the doctor asks Simon why he did it, to which he replies that it was because Mary let him, and they always do. It's revealed that Gordon was the one responsible for killing all of the others, and he finally realizes that instead of slapping his wife, he had actually murdered her and his infant daughter, seemingly under the direction of Simon. Dazed, he stands in Mary's old room, crying and talking into his broken phone to his wife, begging for her forgiveness. The film ends with the doctor on the recording asking Simon where he lives, to which he replies that he lives in the weak and the wounded. While there is an interpretation of this film that doesn't involve any sort of supernatural elements, with Gordon simply finally cracking under so much stress and having a psychotic break, the more common interpretation is that Gordon was being manipulated or possessed by the Simon entity, who was not just part of Mary Hobbs' identity disorder. What exactly Simon is a matter of discussion, possibly being some sort of spirit or demon, although why it latched onto Mary during her childhood and then hung around the abandoned asylum is unclear. Regardless, Session 9 is a gripping, low-budget horror that relies on an unreliable narrator, slowly peeling back more and more, but leaving you unsure until the very end. It's tragic for pretty much every single character in the film, and while there's some campy moments throughout, having it set in the actual Danvers Hospital lends it a delightfully creepy atmosphere. While director Brad Anderson would go on to make much more commercially successful films, Session 9 remains my favorite of his works, proving that interesting writing and creepy atmosphere can make for an excellent horror movie.